Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a very special episode of Pitchside, brought to you by my old employers, McDonald's. We've come full circle. I'm back, baby. I'm loving it.
Nice.
And we want to say a massive welcome to four-time European winner, Clarence Seedorf. Come on.
Thank you so much.
Obviously, we just joked about how this is one of your all-time career highlights coming on pitch side.
Yeah, I mean, after, my record in the Champions League.
Which is pretty average.
Yeah, with three different teams.
Yeah.
I wanted to add that one team.
Yeah.
And one day we could win. Pitchside could have a European Cup. You never know. One day.
We physically don't have enough people, even with Clarence.
We could make a four-side team.
We'd have to lock him in the room and then we could just steal his medals.
Look, we're here ahead of, obviously, the big European match happening this weekend. Manchester City versus Inter Milan. One of your, obviously, former clubs. Man City never have won this competition before. How do you feel it going?
I won't share my feelings about it, but my thoughts with pleasure. It's a special year for both teams. Inter hasn't been in the final since, 14 years now?
Yeah,
something
a long
like that.
Time.
Didn't reach actually semi-final for a long time. And they did well. They did well this season. They beat some important teams. Barcelona was an in and out, and they did it. So they showed that during the season, all the big matches, actually, they practically won them all. Mm. And that make them very dangerous for City in the final. City, they've been just winning everything lately.
Annoyingly.
Amazing season for City. Well deserved to be in the final, but the final is something different. It's different.
Do you feel like Guardiola would have learned, especially from, say, like the last few years, where he admits to himself, doesn't he, that sometimes he overthinks finals? Do you think this time he's, like he did with the FA Cup, he just had a plan and he's just going to go for it?
Yeah, I haven't seen the match of the FA Cup, but I heard it was quite, balanced, the match. That's why I'm saying finals are different.
More of games.
Because you a mistake can ruin your plans, so there's more tension. There's also the habit of playing those matches that Inter as a club has done more. The history counts. People might not understand all of that, but it definitely counts. The way you live towards the matches, when you've been there more times, you are more comfortable, and you know what is coming. It's all more familiar, even if not many players have played the final from Inter side, and Man City is in that flow now. And I think that's going to be the mind game of the final. That's going to be the trick.
As a man that's been in many of those finals, did you ever feel like there was different vibes around the final depending on what team you were in at that point?
You know the team for weeks before. So after a few days, that is out of your head. Now, how do you prepare yourself to be the best in that day? And how do you cope with the tension? So how do you get to the balance? Because you don't have to motivate nobody for these matches, but it's really how can I keep as a coach or as a club, my team in a place where they can flow and where things are not too tense. Expectations, tickets, requests from all over the place. Newspapers, radio stations, everybody's talking about this match. And particularly for City, I think that's going to be their biggest challenge, how they're going to live, towards this match. And then also just to be playing the first final ever in the history of the club. Let's hope for them it's going to be, a joyful momentum. The result, we never know.
Obviously, you'd say that the pressure probably is on Manchester City with the whole them never achieving this great trophy. How would you as a player go into a final? Would you prepare differently? Would you just relax the week prior to it, or would you just stay focused? How do you deal with that pressure?
Now, to your first point, I really don't. You know, for Man City, it's history. Already made history. That can go two ways. You know, already being satisfied in your unconscious mind, or just be motivated more to really get it, bring it home. Winning the FA Cup, winning the league, that gives you massive confidence, of course. But I don't think they lacked confidence in the years past. But they have really played better this season. I also think that Guardiola made some substantial changes in his approach towards defending. Because in the end, that will make the difference. Not so much how good you attack, but how much, you know, how good are you in defending, because you play always against the best players on the other side. That to your first point. Your second point was, again,
how do you deal with the pressure?
Yeah, the pressure. Yeah, because I had something in my mind to tell you how we prepared, especially in my AC Milan period. I can really be clear on that, because it were so many years we were at the top and playing those semifinals and playing the finals. You try to maintain your same, let's say, training habits, hard training. You don't go slower. You try to increase the intensity, but without harming each other physically. So that kind of consciousness of avoiding injuries, stupid injuries, but the intensity, we would maintain that at the max, because it's easy to slow down because you have 2 weeks. Yeah. But then to put it on again is very difficult. So you want to maintain that, and that is the difficult part, actually. Mm-hmm. You don't play any matches anymore. So that's a good thing for City, that they still had an important match not so long
pretty
ago.
Close, yeah.
So they had keep to the maintain rhythm, that mentality and that concentration level. Inter Milan, on the other side, had a longer break, but the Italians have a different mindset. So for them, it's okay. They will prepare physically. They will prepare tactically, go into all the details. Mm. If they need to sit it out for 90 minutes in front of the defense, they will do that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's going to be the tactics, but this is what I mean when history counts. You have been there. Many teams in Italy have been there. Inter has a great history in the Champions League as well. So I think that it will be a very tactical game, unfortunately. But hopefully we'll get an early goal and then things will open up. They say never happens.
Yeah, but it did in the FA.
Yeah, the only time it really happened, two times I think, it was Real Madrid against Valencia. Was really like, seemed like an open game.
Yeah.
And then Milan against Liverpool. That was like crazy match, a lot of goals.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, but let's not get into it.
So would you say on that point, just in terms like the history side, so like certain, when you were like in the Milan team, you had like Cafu, Kaká, players who are used to that level, and whereas like the City players haven't been there and done it, would you say that would give a team an edge with players who've been there, done it, and it's kind of like nothing to them?
Well, you named two of them that were actually the ones who had less experience in the Champions League.
Oh, okay.
The Champions
at,
League.
Time.
At that time.
But I mean, not big guys, but World Cup.
They at national level had great experience, especially Cafu, of course. But I will give you a few of the names. Maldini.
Yeah.
I've been there so many times. Nesta was Costa Curta.
Dida?
We were there for 7 years.
Yeah, always around.
It was like being, you know, playing those.
So, like, it's kind of how you see with Madrid the last few years. To them, it's like normal in a way.
Yeah, well, you always have that tension.
Mm.
It's never a normal game. It's always new. It's a new match. It's a new adversary. It's a new momentum. But you know what it takes to make things happen.
Yeah.
You know to read things fast in the match, and also even in preparation towards the match, something is lacking, something is good. And you also, and like I think Madrid just had to acknowledge they were not good enough in the semifinal and in the second leg, especially.
Yeah.
First, actually, I think they were very
City
good.
City were just too good, weren't they?
But City was just too good, and that happens. And then you also go out with, okay, it's good. You know, I mean, they were just better.
Yeah.
It's really all about knowing the experience brings you to know how to prepare these matches. the preparation.
Yeah.
And then what happens during the match? You will might be 5 to 10 minutes, 15 minutes under pressure. You just need to defend the best way you can.
Not panicking.
Because you know it will, you know, things will turn around at a certain point. So those things will count. And I think that the mentality of Inter in that sense, they are more used to be able to be under pressure and don't crack.
Yeah.
Man City is a team that generally commands the matches. And
it,
so
if they don't get that goal, the longer it goes on, it's,
that it, so this is the reading. But you know, you all have to play the match. At the end,
obviously, you spent a lot of time in Italy, especially when I felt like the Italian teams like Inter and AC really dominated football. Yeah, like they were huge in Europe. And do you see like a resurgence now of obviously Napoli winning Serie A, Inter, AC Milan both getting far in the Champions League? Do you feel and obviously Roma in the other European final? Do you feel the Italian teams are really starting to come into play and be more of a force to reckon with?
Well, it was a great year for Italy, European-wise. And I mean, Juventus has dominated the league for many, many, many years, like 10 years or so. But now there's more balance. There's the competitiveness is back in the Serie A. And that clearly shows also in Europe. And that's good for football.
Yeah.
I do believe that these teams that you mentioned will do well next year as well in the Champions League. They will grow. Mm. The young teams, if they don't sell all the players, they will be competitive again. I'm looking forward to that. And I think it's good. You know, England had its cycle. Spain had its cycle. Italy is coming back. I don't believe AC Milan, they overperformed.
Yeah.
Mm. If you look at the squad, so that was really hats off for what they did. It will be a tough next season for them, but I think that overall, Italy is definitely back on track.
So taking it away from the big tournament itself and more towards your career, you've listed quite a few star-studded names already. Are there any players that were your favourite to play alongside?
Well, I've been really blessed with long career and playing alongside so many incredible players. It's hard to start somewhere.
Yeah, the list is just...
Yeah. It's a good CV.
I can just say that it was really a privilege to have all those teammates and be able to win trophies together, which is an amazing feeling. And the most beautiful thing is what is left after you finish your career and have that friendship.
And look back on,
you know, when we meet and sometimes we play those legend matches and just the connection that is still there. Sometimes the mind wants to do certain things and the body says, you know, go screw yourself. And I mean, you cannot just ask that anymore from my body. So, no, I mean, it's an amazing journey. AC Milan has been the longest period, you know, playing with the same team. So if I would take out two players that I've had so much to do with during the matches, I think it would be Pirlo and Kaká, most likely. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
pretty good.
So not so not that good then. Just Kaká. Yeah,
yeah, because Pirlo
playing
would be
alongside.
That was the connection to, you know, to build
to
it.
Do you hope if we asked them that they'd say you?
No, I mean.
Eight years
is a long time.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Talking of Pirlo and you, I think you two are quite underrated players. Like Kaká gets like the Ballon d'Or, but do you have teammates you've played with who you feel don't get the recognition they should, or are maybe a bit underrated or under the radar?
Yeah, I mean,
because like we all know how
the whole thing about being underrated. Who's underrating? Who's actually underrated?
Just the average schmuck like us.
You know, I think that players know their value, and the players among themselves know what value somebody else had in the matches. I'm sure if you would go and ask the Barcelona team of Xavi and that amazing team about our team, they would speak very highly about us,
yeah.
And vice versa. So it's you know, it's also momentum. The year that Kaká won the Ballon d'Or, I think, was my best season. But he was more determined in the goals that he scored in the season and was actually an amazing. I feel part of his.
I
mean, that's a relationship that was there. There was no jealousy whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I mean, because if there was, you don't win. You know, it was that genuine generosity and wanting the others to shine. And when somebody would score a goal, if you would look at our goals, the celebrations were always authentic. You know, it's not like, okay, I'm not going to celebrate because he scored the goal. No, and that says a lot because I've lived the opposite as well.
Yeah.
Where players would not really celebrate because somebody scored a goal because he wanted to score the goal. And that part of the ego is, just damaging whatever you want to achieve as a team. Yeah.
Is there anyone that you've directly clashed with in that aspect?
I don't remember them all well because you cancel those things in general.
Yeah, keep moving forward.
But we deal with it
at
the moment. I would deal with those things. That was part of the things I would do off the pitch to support, like with some other players, and make sure that we all keep, you know, focused on the common goal.
How would it say this build up to this weekend, for example, how would an argument within the squad affect, like, the ripple effect and the rest of the squad? Or would say that Guardiola, the manager, just come in and just nip it in the bud straight away?
No, actually it's good if you have arguments. I think that with the teams that we achieved things with, I mean, it was a fight every day.
Yeah.
it was like, because the competitiveness is there, you care about the results, you care about what you're doing, and if there is something that wrong, the teams with whom I won things with, we would have amazing social control. The coach would come in really in extreme, but it never really got to that point. We would already handle it as a team, and players would know, including myself sometimes, because sometimes you do certain things mm-hmm. with the best intention, but if the team considers it not a good thing for the team, the team will speak out or act in a certain way that puts everybody back in position. And that's where you make also the difference, because there is honesty, there's a commitment, mm-hmm. and there's a sort of brotherhood, because that's what you create, especially when you're like together 300 days in a year. I mean, it's a lot of time that you spend together, so the arguments are actually important, the discussions and the fights, and important how you deal with it after. So when it's finished, it's finished. And you know, you discuss things, you talked about them, you stay a bit, you know, upset for a few days if you want, but after that, when we're on the pitch, we're united. And that's, I think, the spirit of sports in general, I believe. But I think when you want to achieve something as a team, as a group, whether it's in sports or in business or whatever, this element has to be in place if you want to be competitive. Yeah.
Would you say there's a particular hothead you've played with over your career?
Oh, so like, many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could name a few, I reckon.
You know, my good friend John Dahl Thomason was
Very
fiery. Yeah.
Oh, that's
big
surprising.
Big personality.
Not the name
of that. No, that wasn't.
Big personality, of course. Gattuso. Yeah, that's one. It. I know you were waiting on that one.
Gattuso was passion.
No, I mean hothead in a bad way.
No. Hot-headed.
Yeah, just
like, not passion, hot-headed.
Yeah, I don't remember John Dahl Thomason being like that.
Just check him. Defenders were never happy playing against him. He was fiery, but I like that in him.
I mean,
I love that in him. He was tiny. He was not a big guy, but he would put up a fight like serious. Yeah. So let's keep the hot headed in a positive sense.
No, that's what you're right?
Those who had less control of themselves. There were some others as well. I think that. At Real Madrid, or was it at Real Madrid? Well, Edgar Davids was a hothead.
Yeah.
He was one.
Yeah.
Did he have some?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then at Real Madrid, who was the hothead there? Panucci.
Okay.
Panucci.
Never you?
Well, I...
Too calm?
I'm calm. I could be calm, but I also could be... No, I mean, not a hothead. Like, I had more control of the things. Mm. But if I needed to say something, I would say something. So yeah. I was more like a direct shooter. Mm.
Yeah.
Not so much being a hothead. Like, hothead for me is when you don't really... You just explode.
React.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like...
Were there any players that were the complete opposite? So just total training ground jokers rather than hotheads? Always trying to make somebody laugh.
Positive.
Yeah.
No, but these guys were all positive at the end of the day. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's really the determination of how... What do we mean with being a hothead? I mean, you can also describe it in a negative sense. But these players were just the way they are. And in a team, you have all different characters. And at the end... Everybody in certain moments, because sometimes you need those reactions.
Mm.
You need something to happen. Sometimes it was all flat and then those would just explode and something would happen. You move things, you know, from an emotional standpoint. But yeah, we had the jokers, so many jokes. I mean, also Gattuso was a joker. Pirlo was a joker. Roberto Carlos was a joker. Carambeu was an amazing guy. Calm guy, but also hothead. I don't know if you remember. So we were very close, and at a certain point, I think we had a meeting somewhere near a supermarket, and on the he parked his car, and there was this paparazzi because he was dating, and they had paparazzi on their case all the time. So he broke the camera. On the guy, and the guy had to run, and that was Carambeu. But Carambeu, on the other hand, is also like a teddy bear. Like they call him Monsieur. Monsieur, that's Monsieur is his nickname. That says a lot about his character. I mean, the gentleman and nice guy and stuff. But oof, don't piss him off.
Yeah, don't get on the wrong side. Yeah.
That brings me on to it because obviously. Footballers, you know, they can live this lavish lifestyle, but at the same time, it comes with a lot of pressure. What would you say the best and the worst thing about being a professional footballer is?
Well, the best thing is you're generally it's the game that one loves. I will speak for myself. I mean, when I play, still, I just love the game. I enjoy it. I've enjoyed it until my last day. I played many. Others really don't, because maybe it wasn't really what they wanted to do, but they were just good enough and things happened for them. But they didn't like the pressure of, you know, everything around it. I actually enjoyed the whole package. I'm just thinking about some of the moments, yeah, and having the possibility actually to live in this world for so long, and what it has given me back as well. Yeah, I've really just enjoyed the whole thing, but many don't, and they feel the pressure. They feel that, you know, that the privacy is not a lot, and I think that goes a bit for people who are public figures. It's not easy, but. I always say, you know, when you have been blessed with a talent and you're able to make money with that talent, I mean, what else can you ask for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're obviously very fortunate enough to play in a lot of stadiums. Obviously, San Siro is coming to its end, you know, that it's saying goodbye to it. What was your...
Really? That's 30 years I'm hearing that, but it's not happening.
I think this is the... finally it's happening.
Are they still going to share?
They're making two stadiums, aren't they?
No, it's not happening.
Not happening. Never will happen.
30 years of talking about it, and it's not happening still. Yeah.
What was it like walking out
exclusive
at like the Bernabeu, the San Siro?
So I'll give you my top three stadiums.
Yeah.
The Hawthorns.
But you need to guess the first one though. Okay. The two that you already mentioned, the two others, but.
Okay. What continent?
The number one.
What continent?
Yeah, you need to tell me.
Continent. Just give me the continent.
Give me the continent.
Europe.
Maybe Europe, no. Right?
Sure. Not in Europe.
No. Was it in Brazil?
The Maracanã.
Oh, no.
What's the one in...
Oh,
have you ever played the Boca?
Think about Maradona.
Yeah,
oh, Boca Juniors.
You ever played the Boca Juniors?
No, 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 no. I said think about Maradona, not about Argentina.
Napoli.
No.
It's not in Europe, Tom.
Oh, yeah, but who's he played for outside of Europe and South America?
Botafogo.
Okay. What about we go to the World Cups?
South Africa. Oh, Mexico.
Ah, 86.
He's done us.
So, which one?
The Aztec Stadium, is it?
Azteca.
Azteca, see?
Is that like 100,000?
120,000.
Oof, wow. What do you play for Holland there?
Before the World Cup, 94, we had a friendly in that stadium against with Ajax, with Ajax against the Mexican national team. This was their last friendly match before the World
Cup. Warm-up game, yeah.
Did they fill it?
So we started our warm up and everything, and then there were like maybe 10,000 people in such a huge stadium, and just coming with the bus, you see all those pillars from kilometers away touching the roof. I mean, just impressive. So we entered warm up and we said, okay, no, we didn't think it would be full because you know, young just boys from Ajax coming so we went back in and then came back out and it was full. Completely full in the colors of the national flag green, and everything. I mean, wow. Like, and the fact is they really 10 minutes they can fill it and 10 minutes is empty. The same thing with Bernabeu can be full in a second and it's empty and very because the infrastructure is just done in that way. You just would be the second one. And San Siro, these are my three favorite. And the reason why I'm saying it, because they're very close to the pitch and they go straight up.
So you like that, you don't find that intimidating or, because I guess some players would find that if possibly overwhelming.
An away,
yeah,
away
but
player.
That's where the difference is between players and players as well.
You thrived on that then?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I kidding you.
Well, they were my home stadiums at the end, so that was also something, but it can also be hard to be you
pressure,
know,
you see that a lot with Man United players. They don't deal with
Trafford. Play better outside. Yeah, 100%.
On the other side of it, what was it like going to, say, Barcelona or obviously playing at the San Siro against Inter or AC when you're at either of the clubs?
Was that weird, by the way? Was that not really weird?
No,
playing at the San Siro as an away team for AC or Inter?
Well, never really away because they split practically the, you know, one part was Inter fans and the other part was the Milan fans. But Barcelona was, that rivalry is the biggest one.
Especially
in the world.
Yeah.
But the stadium didn't impact me as much as a Bernabeu would do or, because come now it's really
open, isn't it? Yeah.
So, of course, you feel, the people and stuff, but it's different. The stadium the stadium effect was not really what really playing against Barcelona was difficult.
Yeah.
The big pitch and the wet pitch and, all of that. You know, the quality of Barcelona, the way they played. That was always a challenge there, but not so much the stadium. But every time, Juventus... It was playing against Juventus. It was difficult, not so much because the environment would add something to it for me, especially in Del Alpi when they had the old stadium. Now it's a bit better.
Yeah, it's changed.
Yeah.
What was it like? Obviously, being from Holland, you got a lot of players to look up to. Johan Cruyff. Who is the person you looked up to as a child?
Well, my idol was Frank Rijkaard when I grew up. And then, of course, the 88 team with Ruud Gullit and Van Basten and all these guys. And I loved Zico as well. Zico was one of my idols when I grew up because I watched them as a 10-year-old, 12-year-old.
Yeah, sticking your mind out.
The World Cups. And, I mean, Zico was amazing those times. And, of course, the great Pelé and those great players. Johan Cruyff, of course, had a great impact because his team selected me when I came as a young boy to Ajax for the trials. He was a sport director in those times. Wow. So there's that relationship.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's
special
amazing.
To play with your idol and win the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The first one.
Not bad.
You've mentioned a lot of, obviously your career CV is incredible. Were there any transfers that didn't occur for you or clubs that...
Or close ones.
Into, almost happened.
Surely the Premier League. Yeah, surely the Premier League came calling.
Somebody, yeah, they came three times seriously. One was after my Sampdoria experience, and I went to Real Madrid. I could have gone to Arsenal or Manchester United.
Oof.
And then after Real Madrid, I went to Inter, but then also same clubs again.
Oof.
For England, didn't happen because I had the chance to play with Ronaldo and Vieri in my number 10 position.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
So Lippi was the coach.
Yeah.
You know, considered one of the best coaches in the world. And so I went back to Italy. I knew Italy already. So, and then when Ancelotti went to Chelsea, he wanted to bring me with him. And I think also Pirlo was on the list, but it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So there were some other options, but nothing really concrete. I mean, yeah.
Just quickly, Ronaldo was like my idol growing up. So was he as good as he looked? Like,
really?
Yeah.
The best.
Like in training as well, just like.
When he had when he wanted to train, yes.
A lot of people say R9 and Ronaldinho, they just jogged around here and there, and then game day. Incredible.
It's cultural, isn't it, though? Like the Brazilians
no,
are...
No, so R9 was not always, like, off in training, but he just didn't have to do...
They turn it on when they want.
Much,
yeah.
Because that was the way he played. He was a striker. So he would put you to sleep and then he would get the ball and do his thing. Ronaldinho was different. Ronaldinho was... he also played more from the wing side and... His game was different, much more involved, of course, with the ball than Ronaldo. Ronaldo, but the thing with Ronaldo is that I think he's just, you know, the most complete player that I've played with. He had it all, and he played in a very concrete way, focused to all his actions were to determine something, not just for fun. And then left and right. I think I was speaking yesterday about him with Julio Cesar. I said, like everything, speed, power, control, vision of the game. He would see things sometimes. I was like, what did you see? I mean, I have a good vision of the game, but what did you actually see? And then you find somebody in front of the goal completely free. Yeah, he was special, very special.
Obviously, so earlier we played a bit of football with you. You had a couple goes yourself, and you even like attempted almost like a bicycle strike. So you're clearly in shape at the moment. You clearly work out, and we've seen some photos. You're clearly in good shape at the moment. Could you still play? Could you fit into a side? Where would you play?
Listen, I think age is a number. Now it's been 10 years. I've been
that's the definite
out
yes,
of the game. it would be a challenge, not for 90 minutes, but I would be able, if I would put myself in training and all of this stuff. Yeah, I think because I'm fit. I don't have any issues. My knees are good. My ankles are good. I don't have any major issues. So, but it comes with a lot of other stuff.
Do you miss it?
No.
Really?
Interesting.
No.
You're like...
I played it for a long time.
Yeah, no, but it's, a lot of people go, "Oh, I should have retired earlier or later," or you feel like you got
Listen,
that spot on.
Well, I have a philosophy of life, is which I live what I have, and what I don't have, I don't have. So I'm going to be focused on it. Otherwise, it gives you all kinds of strange.
Feelings. I think that's the perfect answer.
You know, beautiful. And when I stopped playing, I could have played another 4 or 5 years. I mean, if these guys played, I was 38 when I stopped.
Yeah.
But I could have played easily. Zé Roberto played until his 44 years, and we were in the same competition at that point, and I was actually fitter than he was.
Yeah,
many times and stuff. But then the opportunity came to go and coach, and I did it, and I feel good. Because everything I did in my life, in my career, I gave it all.
Mm.
So when I look back, I say, okay, you know, I can just be satisfied and move forward. There's so many things to do in life.
How do you keep yourself fit at the moment then? Is it mostly gym?
I've seen watching you guys is a big inspiration.
Jumping you know.
I'm not a big gym person, but it's important. I'm an outdoor person. My whole life has been outdoors. So for me to be in a gym is believe me, that was not the most fun part of our career, to be in the gyms. You do that because you need to do that. It's something that you need to do. So I do it. This is how I maintain myself. But I think that the biggest part is really my lifestyle. You know, how I cope with stress, how I recover from fatigue, how I, my nutrition. I don't drink alcohol. I don't, you know, I eat healthy, drink healthy in general. And that is a big, big chunk of it.
Yeah.
And then I maintain myself at least 3 times a week. I'm working out. And if I skip a week, no issues because I'm just consistent.
Do you have
my lifestyle during my career is the same I have now.
That's
so as you've maintained it. Yeah.
I maintained it.
So you're doing running, you're doing like functional sort of fitness.
I do.
Looking for tips.
I got you. It's very personal. What works for me might not work for you. What I always say to people is, first of all, don't kill yourself because no need. If you need to play Champions League, we have been killing ourselves for 20 plus years.
Yeah.
Doing things that our body actually didn't like at all wasn't even good for the body.
Yeah. Mm.
So now I'm in a phase of maintaining myself. So, and the people should understand that. That doesn't mean you need to push yourself and get to that, you know, touching the limit and stuff. But also, it's not about being 2 hours in the gym. You can do half an hour every day and be efficient.
Good half an hour, yeah.
Yeah, what is your goal? What are you working for? And feel good, you know. Once you feel good, and you understand what you're doing nutrition-wise, you understand how you're doing from a mental point of view. And I think that is where this generation has a big challenge with all the external information that is coming in, and a lot of time the wrong information coming in, and how to elaborate all of that and be more connected with yourself. So that awareness. I'm going to start an awareness program, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah, very soon. This year, I will knock it out. It's called the Mind of an Athlete.
I like that.
So because it's all about the mindset.
Mm. Yeah, that's where it starts, right?
Yeah.
I've seen that you also play golf though. So is that...
But believe me,
are you no good?
The balls went everywhere.
Me and you both.
Not in the right place. Yeah, golf is not my thing. I'm tennis.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Okay. Full on, yes.
Yeah, you play a lot?
No, I don't play a lot anymore, but I mean, I even watch tennis.
Would you say
I would wake up for the Australian Open.
Nice.
I mean, I wouldn't care.
That. Yeah. Would you say that's your favorite sport other than football?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And that's you've been keeping that hobby throughout your career as well? Or is it a hobby that you've
No, because
post?
During my career, there was really no time or energy to do it.
Okay.
So I was more watching on television.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very good friends with Djokovic and with Boris Becker, especially since years. And he was one of my idols, actually, growing up, him and Edberg.
Oh, Djokovic is an AC Milan fan, isn't he?
Or he is an AC Milan fan. That's how we got connected. And Boris really... that's now almost 20 years relationship. Yeah, he's an amazing guy. Yeah.
Did you watch the tennis thing on Netflix?
From him?
No, they followed the tour last year.
Oh,
Breakpoint.
No,
Breakpoint. Really good.
No, it's good. It's really good. Check it out.
Yeah, it's really, really good. We got some listener questions coming up. More quick fire ones. Someone says, how did you... Well, we sort of touched this on already.
We've done that.
Who are the 3 players you can see winning the Ballon d'Or in the next 5 years?
Vinicius Junior.
Good shout.
De Bruyne.
Ooh.
If Valverde scores more goals...
Ooh.
I like that shot.
And he will play more as a center midfield, like a midfielder.
Yeah.
I like that.
He maybe not reaching, you know, it's hard to compete with the strikers and those who determine really the matches, but he can be among the best for sure. I coached him, by the way, before he went back to Madrid.
Really?
Where? La Coruña.
Ah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Could you see then?
Oh, first training, I said, who's this? I had to put my first 11 team for the first match. And I said, okay, start put, I don't know where he plays, but put his name on the list. He's a starter. And he wasn't at all what he is today. But the potential was clear. Wow. Yeah, dynamic. And that Uruguayan, you know. Great. Fire.
Yeah.
Not a play. I'm just trying to check. So if Leao continues to develop and becomes more efficient in his choices without the ball, because I think that's where he can improve a lot. He's a guy who can like Kaká was to be able to determine matches.
Match winner. Well.
He has that. He can just break through and
match winner.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, and just decide matches. So not as early as the other ones that I mentioned, but potentially.
Potential.
And who else do we have? I mean, the City. Has
not another Frenchman over at PSG.
Killian.
I mean, Mbappé, we have to mention him, really?
Well, yeah,
I mean, he's already there.
Yeah. True.
This is like, I mean, he's been already there. So for me, I'm talking about the
next generation.
Da Silva, he has a great
who's season. Who's that, sorry?
Silva.
Which Silva's that?
City.
Oh, Bernardo.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was thinking of Thiago Silva.
Bernardo has.
He's unbelievable. Yeah.
He's on fire.
John Stones. Is that a good season?
Your favorite.
I love it, John Stones.
Because you know, it's hard. Sometimes it's just a momentum, and you have a few great months, and that's why it's hard to give some names out, because I want to see
longevity.
Give me a few seasons of it. Haaland, we haven't mentioned him. Best player? No. Best striker?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. You know.
So yeah, interesting. The thing I like about Haaland is his mentality. I really
just a killer, isn't he?
And I hear good things about him. That is what I appreciate of, you know, this younger generation. There's not a lot of them that have that.
They all say, like, that fire. His preparation, his nutrition, everything.
And I'm not saying it's their fault. I said the surrounding and the environment is not pushing them, you know, to get there. And that's why you have seen that difference between some of the clubs around and the others, like Madrid.
It's a similar vein of question to the previous one, but are there any young upcoming players that aren't in this kind of conversation that you're excited to see in the future? Maybe
Xavi Simmons,
exactly.
Yeah, maybe young Dutch stars.
Yeah, but you know, I always say it's not about the age. So many we have seen in the past that were very, very young and were killing it. When you're ready, you're ready, and you make a difference.
Jude Bellingham.
Yeah. Well, even Odegaard was 15, right?
Yeah,
And this German striker, what's his name? The young boy.
Oh, for Dortmund?
Adeyemi.
No, he played the World Cup as well.
Not Musiala.
What's his name? He plays in Bayern, I think, yeah.
Musiala?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he's like a midfielder. Yeah, he's good. Like he's very good. He's similar to Bellingham, isn't he? But
He plays a bit like second striker.
He couldn't play for England. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
And we miss out.
Scored the winner for the Bayern.
Yeah, he's special.
The next one from a viewer says, what do you bench? What do you bench press? As you know, and
if you do,
that's crazy.
I don't do it a lot.
There's not enough weights, right?
No, really. I do a lot of functional strength exercises because I don't need to grow muscles.
Yeah.
So it's
same.
No, it's more about my flexibility and movement. I need to be mobile and agile. So I obviously do very basic leg extension, leg curl, leg press, and all the standard ones.
Yeah.
How much do you leg press then if we can do bench?
Yeah, I mean, leg press can
the whole machine.
Yeah, almost. If we do maximum, we can go to 150, 160, most likely.
That's just a joke, mate.
But I maintain for with 100.
Yeah, wow. As you do.
Easy. Yes, easy. Because it's also technique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not all power.
Yeah, that's why I can't.
Lifting. Yeah. How many times do you see people that are like lifting? Yeah, it's real power, but there's also the technique. And that's what many people forget. Even shooting from certain distances, power. But you know, with power, you're not going to get anywhere.
And finally, now I've got one. Are you going to give us a prediction for the big game on Saturday?
Prediction?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll be sitting out 120 minutes.
Really?
And penalty kicks.
You think it's going to be a proper Italian?
No, well,
Italian. The Italian
it's
job.
It's going to be a proper. Champions League final.
Yeah. Wow, really? Wow, well, you know more than me, but I just think City are going to steam up.
No way, man.
It's a final.
Anything can happen.
I feel like you know something that we don't know.
No, it's
a mentality.
Have you been speaking?
You know, how many times we try to predict the final?
Yeah, it's just wrong.
Yeah.
We just never right. Because it's not just the logics of, oh, both teams have had an amazing season. City obviously has had a better season in terms of winning things, but the competitiveness of Inter Milan in the Champions League has been at the highest level.
It's one game.
They have players that want to show something. Lukaku's not even playing starter. And Dzeko is a former City guy.
Yeah, you know,
I'm looking at all kinds of things that can influence this match.
Yeah.
City can easily go over 10.
Yeah.
Because
I've seen it before in the past. Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah, Chelsea.
But as I said, just to make clear, City is undeniably the better team here. But that doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean the best team doesn't always win.
No. Look at Inter Milan when they reached the final against Barcelona.
And they didn't
see the ball for the 90 minutes. So.
We'll live on that.
That was interesting. I like that one.
Yeah.
I didn't think you'd say that.
Clarence, well, thank you very much for joining us on Pitchside.
Oh, thank you.
Very,
guys.
Very much appreciated. And obviously, thank you to McDonald's for making this all possible.
You can add it to his list of achievements now, boys. There you go.
Finally. Before
he goes,
At the four top.
Four European titles.
Pitchside.
As it should be. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to drop a like. Subscribe on YouTube. Make sure you rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Make sure to order your McDelivery on my McDonald's app for the big game this weekend. And we will see you all next week. Bye-bye.